We have one final case matter that's going to be heard by ITV. Again, this will be from Clay County.
Just for your information, there's nobody else present in this room at this time except for the parties who just argued.
Thank you.
I can look in the hallway, though.
Thank you, if you would. That would be appreciated. Mr. Hushka, are you present?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Oh, that would be you?
That would be me, yes.
I'll have this case called then for hearing.
The next matter is A190906, State of Minnesota Respondent versus Jordan Adam Burstad, Appellant.
In this particular matter, there is no respondent's brief that has been filed. Mr. Hushka, I've already identified you because I was looking to see if you were there. For your awareness, we are missing an appellant jurist. Michelle Larkin is ill today. She will participate in the panel hearings. We will not have any interruption as far as the timeline for processing. Please, and I should also tell you, because there is no respondent's brief filed, you are not entitled to any rebuttal, so you'll only have your original 15 minutes to present your client's case in chief. When you're ready to proceed, for record purposes, identify yourself and your client.
Thank you, Judge. As indicated, my name is Drew Hushka of the Vogel Law Firm in Fargo. I'm representing the appellant in this case, Mr. Burstad. This case arises from a criminal conviction based on a stipulation at the district court level. And we are appealing four issues related to suppression in this case. The four issues are whether or not law enforcement's mistake of an outstanding warrant was reasonable, whether or not law enforcement permissibly subjected Mr. Burstad to custodial arrest, whether or not there was reasonable suspicion to run a drug dog around the vehicle driven by Mr. Burstad, and whether or not there was a nexus related to the search warrant for Mr. Burstad's house. Is our position that...
All right, well, before you get going on your arguments, the concern I have is under number 3 and 4 of your articulated argument to be presented. You stipulated at the district court level as to what the issues are, and my reading of the court proceedings does not indicate that the dog sniff was contemplated or considered to be one of the issues on appeal, nor the search of the residence. And as long as I'm asking about that, when you respond to the search of the residence, I cannot find that there is necessarily anything that was seized as a result of the search of the residence.
Your Honor, that is my limited understanding. I guess for background purposes, this was not my case at the district court level. I took over this case at the appellate level when the original judge was elevated to the district court, to the bench, so I wasn't part of the stipulation or anything of that matter, so I will defer to if that's the court's reading the stipulation. I believe they were included as Ms. Rosenfeld, the original attorney, was involved in the drafting of the positions, but if that is the position the court is going to take, that they were not properly preserved. Obviously, if they're not preserved, the court cannot consider them at this time. But I believe that the court does not even need to reach those two issues because the first issue is dispositive in this case, Your Honor, and that is whether or not the mistake was reasonable when Officer Johnsrud seized Mr. Burstad. And the facts in this case are not in dispute, both because the state did not file a response brief and because we agree with the factual findings that were made by the district court, which are that on March 31st or April 1st of 2018, Officer Johnsrud gained, in his words, knowledge of an outstanding warrant for Mr. Burstad. Now, he did not say how he got this knowledge. He doesn't say if he was read it. He doesn't say if he was told it. He doesn't say what the outstanding warrant was for. He provided no information regarding how old the warrant would have been, but he just says that on the weekend before he got knowledge that there was an outstanding warrant. Now, 4 or 5 days later, in the morning hours of April 5th, Officer John Drew was on patrol. He was proceeding down the road when he saw a car about to exit a parking lot, and he believed that Mr. Burstead was driving that car. Again, he hadn't heard that morning that there was an outstanding warrant, but he still believed from the previous weekend that there was an outstanding warrant. He did not try to confirm his belief at all. Instead, he pulled a U-turn and began proceeding following the vehicle, which turned off into another parking lot that belonged to an apartment complex. That car came to a stop. The driver exited and began walking towards the apartment complex. At that time, Officer John Drew pulled into the parking lot himself, instructed the driver, who was Mr. Burstead, to freeze, to stop, to identify himself, and seized him at that time. Mr. Burstead accurately immediately identified that there was no warrant out for his arrest. Nevertheless, Officer John Drew continued to detain Mr. Burstead while he checked finally with dispatch whether or not there was a warrant. Dispatch confirmed that there was no warrant, but did identify that Mr. Burstead's driving privileges had been revoked. Officer John Drew at that time asked for proof of insurance. Mr. Burstead explained the vehicle wasn't his and didn't know if there was proof of insurance inside the vehicle. When he was unable to locate any proof of insurance, Officer John Drew subjected him to custodial arrest for the misdemeanor offenses. He patted him down, found $2,000 in cash in his wallet, transported him to the law enforcement center, where a second search of his person revealed a drug pipe. Officer John Drew forwarded all this information to a drug task force officer. That officer had heard from his sergeant reports from an alleged concerned citizen of short-term traffic coming and going from Mr. Burstead's residence. Mr. Burstead's residence is a mile away from where this stop actually occurred. It's not part of the apartment complex where the seizure of Mr. Burstead occurred. Based on that, they brought a drug detection dog to the vehicle that was not Mr. Burstead's, but that he was driving, ran the dog around the vehicle. The dog alerted. They subsequently got a search warrant for the vehicle, and they got a search warrant for Mr. Burstead's residence later based on that.
You know, Mr. Hushka, based upon your recitation here, and it's consistent with your brief, if the officer reasonably approached your client initially and your client stated that that warrant's been taken care of, did the officer have to take his word on that, or would it have been reasonable for the officer to call dispatch and confirm that the warrant no longer existed?
And, Your Honor, I believe that goes to the reasonableness, which is,
right,
as the court is aware, a fact-specific term. And if that morning Officer Johns would have gotten a report that the warrant was still outstanding, or if he had been told in it, you know, the briefing before his shift on the morning of the 5th that there was a warrant, I believe that, yes, he could have waited and kept him in custody and actually verified that the warrant had been taken care of, as Mr. Burstead indicated. But that's not what happened in this case. There was there's no evidence of when exactly Officer John Drew learned about this warrant, and there's no proof by the state. And the state, in this case, Your Honor, since it was a warrantless seizure, a presumptively unreasonable seizure, the state bears the burden of proving reasonableness.
Well, wouldn't this be a credibility determination as to whether the officer thought there was a warrant outstanding?
And I believe that he did think there was, Your Honor, but it's whether or not that thought, that belief, was reasonableness. And it's our position, it's not a reasonable belief when there's not evidence in the record that the state bore the burden of producing that it was a reasonable belief. Again, there's no evidence in the record before the district court that there actually was a warrant out in this time frame for Mr. Burstead's arrest. There's not evidence in the record of when or how Officer John Drew specifically formed this belief.
I thought it was the previous weekend.
That's what he said, that he formed a knowledge. But again, he doesn't identify the date. He doesn't identify how that knowledge came to be, whether it was he was told that, whether he read that, whether he was talking, you know, to another officer, and that officer said, oh, I think there's a warrant out for Burstead. It's unclear whether he was specifically told, whether he was told there was a belief there was, or how exactly this, you know, quote-unquote knowledge came to be.
What about Mr. Burstead's conduct? The testimony was that he was driving fast, walked very fast to the front of the apartment building. Isn't that consistent with somebody that's looking to get rid of the cop that's following him? I mean, wouldn't that also lead an officer to believe that perhaps there is an outstanding warrant because he's looking to get lost?
Your Honor, I believe that that's not what the evidence is fairly characterized. By the time that Officer Johnsrud had turned around, the vehicle had already pulled into the parking lot and was proceeding towards a residence. Again, there's no allegation that Mr. Burstead sped or drove in an overly quick fashion or that he was, you know, running towards the apartment complex. He was described as walking, albeit in a quick manner, but he was walking towards the apartment complex. I don't believe that the evidence shows that he was trying to elude law enforcement in this case. He was proceeding towards his destination in a manner permitted by law. Matter of fact, I believe Officer Johns would specifically testify that there was not any traffic violation observed in this case that would have allowed him to seize Mr. Burstead at all. The second issue, and like I said, to encapsulate it all, Your Honor, we believe it was the state's burden to prove that the officer was reasonable in forming this mistake of belief. We believe that the facts fail to show that this mistake was reasonableness. We believe the Wisconsin Court of Appeals case, although only persuasive, is the closest case anywhere in the United States that we were able to find on point, and it clearly shows that the officer's belief in this case was not reasonable. That is what the issue is, and for that reason, we would ask that everything subsequent be suppressed, which would moot all the other issues. The second issue in this case, Your Honor, is the reasonableness of the custodial arrest. And again, the cause for the arrest in this case were two misdemeanors, driving after revocation and driving without proof of insurance. Because it was misdemeanors, there are only three permissible cases. There are instances where a custodial arrest can be made if Mr. Burstead posed a danger to himself or others, which there was no allegation at all. The second is whether or not Mr. Burstead would fail to respond to a citation, which there is no evidence. There's no evidence that he had in the past failed to respond to any type of citation, that he failed to appear at any type of court proceeding or otherwise comply with law enforcement. So that justification doesn't stand. The only possible justification is whether or not he posed a danger of additional criminal violations. And the evidence simply does not support that, Your Honor. This was a traffic violation for which he was arrested.
Well, he didn't live in the building. I mean, it was obvious he didn't live there. So there is the possibility he's got to drive to leave, and he doesn't have a license.
But even if it was his building, at some point he's going to have to leave, even if it was his residence, whether it's to go to work, whether it's to go eat, whether it's to get food, whether it's something. Even if it was his residence, at some point he would have to leave. And so we don't believe that that issue is dispositive. In this case of State versus Vernado, the case identified and heavily briefed in our brief, the Minnesota Supreme Court identified that when a motorist is stopped for a traffic violation but has ceased their driving activities, that they no longer pose a specific danger of additional criminal behavior. That is precisely what happened in this case. Mr. Burstead had ceased driving. As the court had identified, this was not even Mr. Burstead's vehicle. This was not his residence. Accordingly, it would be a fair assumption that he was meeting someone or was going to be with someone, and that person could have driven Mr. Burstead around if he had needed to. There's simply no evidence that Mr. Burstead was, after he was identified, after he was given a citation, that he would engage in additional criminal conduct in this case. This case is controlled by Vernado, and for that reason, we would ask that everything subsequent to the custodial arrest also be suppressed, which would in turn move the issues 3 and 4.
So if we get to that issue, Mr. Hushka, what's our standard of review? The district court judge found that under the rule there was a basis to allow the officer to make a custodial arrest. Do we review that de novo? Do we review that based on an abuse of discretion? The brief doesn't touch on what our standard of review is, and I just wonder if you have a position on that.
Your Honor, I don't remember specifically seeing any indication in the case law what the standard is. I would put to the court that it should be a de novo standard of review. It is a question of law. This court should accept the findings of fact made by the district court arbitrary or unless unsupported by the evidence, and we are not contesting the factual basis. But the significance of those facts, this court should review de novo as a legal question. So that's what I would say is the proper standard of review in this case would be de novo.
Thank you.
As for the third issue, Your Honor, it's whether or not there was reasonable suspicion for there to be a dog sniff in this case. And I understand the court's potential hesitation of reaching that issue, so I will go briefly over these last two. The only thing found, the arrest for a traffic violation isn't going to reveal evidence of a controlled substance violation. The only potential reasonable suspicion of a controlled substance violation was cash, which Mr. Burstead accurately identified that the cash in his wallet was casino winnings. Casino winnings aren't reasonable suspicion of a drug violation. And then it was the personal use drug pipe that was found on his person at the law enforcement center. Now, at that time, the law enforcement didn't indicate that there was any type of smell or odor to Mr. Burstead. There was no indication that he had been recently partaking or recently consuming a controlled substance. So therefore, we would put forth that there's no time to believe that there would be anything additional found regarding controlled substance in the car, and so that reasonable suspicion did not attach. And finally, as I see my time is winding down, on the fourth issue, Your Honor, we also put forth that there is no nexus to Mr. Burstead's residence in this case. His residence was a mile away from where the stop occurred, a mile away from where everything that was found in the vehicle, if the court even considers that. You know, the case law and the Supreme Court in State versus Suit is very clear that there has to be a nexus tying what is found to a residence, when even if it is a drug crime, that there has to be allegations regarding the residence. The only allegations regarding Mr. Burstead's residence were the complaints from this quote-unquote concerned citizen. Now, the law enforcement said concerned citizen for a reason, because it's a term of art, and concerned citizens are presumptively believed. But there's nothing in the record that proves this concerned citizen was a concerned citizen. There is no identification. There is nothing besides use of the term concerned citizen. And the case law is clear is that when a concerned citizen status is claimed, that there has to be some evidence to show that that person is a concerned citizen. And there simply is not in this case, Your Honor. And for that reason, we also believe that there's no nexus tying for the search of Mr. Burstead's residence. Your Honor, in our brief in this case, I put forth a quote from Justice Gorsuch regarding that enforcing constitutional rights bears its burden, but our founders thought that burden was worth it. I want to leave the court with a final quote regarding Benjamin Franklin. That's better that 1,000 guilty walk free than a single innocent suffer. Your Honor, Mr. Burstead is guilty in this case. He stipulated the facts and was found guilty, but this court should protect his rights to prevent innocent persons from being unreasonably subjected to search and seizure. For that reason, we'd ask for the reversal, and I see my time has lapsed unless there are any additional questions.
Nothing further.
That was perfect timing. Thank you. Thank you for appearing by ITV to argue the matters in support of your briefing and on behalf of your client. The matter is deemed under advisement and a decision will be issued in the statutory time frame. That does conclude our oral argument calendar today. We stand in adjournment.